I'm Valerie Luke, co-founder and cook of Rice, Paper, Scissors, and tonight Inform is hosting Climbing the SF Food Chain. And we're joined by Anthony Mient, chef or co-founder of Mission Street Food, Mission Bowling Club, Mission Chinese Food, Mission Burger, and Commonwealth Restaurant. We also have Issa Ravens, founder of Forage SF, the Underground Market, and Forage Kitchen. Richie Nakano, chef and owner of Hopper Ramen, and sometimes known as the Man of Steel. He did not ask me to say that. And Craig Stoll, chef and co-owner, along with his wife, Annie, of Delfina, Pizzeria Delfina, Locanda, and is the 2008 James Beard Award winner for Best Chef. Tonight, this fantastic assembly of top chefs will share their personal stories through the San Francisco culinary world. All right, you guys. So tonight's panel is called Climbing the SF Food Ladder. And we're just going to talk about the different paths we took, how they kind of compare and contrast. So, Craig, since you're the one with the most experience here, we'd love to hear kind of your path through the food world and how that helped you build up your four restaurants.
How long do I get?
However long you need, baby.
So, I've been here, I've been in San Francisco 25 years, and I moved out here after college. College was hospitality management. So I went to CIA for culinary in New York, straight out of high school when I was 18, when they didn't have the Food Network, when my parents didn't know why in the world I would choose this. And I went to culinary school, and I started working. I started working in high school. Started working as a busser and a dishwasher. And when I was 15, 16 years old, and I loved it. It was instant love, in part because they gave me beer, and in part because got me girlfriends, and I just also I loved the camaraderie in the kitchen. I loved being treated like a grown up. I dug it. So went to culinary school straight out of high school, and then I went to hospitality management school in Miami. So it was I was all culinary all the time. I would call that the traditional path, I guess. Moved out here to work for Bradley Ogden in 1988, sorry. And then worked as a cook and a prep cook and a sous chef all over the city. Got a chance to go work and stage in Italy and went to a culinary school there. Had an incredible experience, came back, worked some more as a sous chef, was a chef, worked around the city. And I had a short stint working in a restaurant in Mill Valley called The Frog and the Peach, and it lasted about a year. And the best thing about that, though, is I met my wife, Annie, who was running the depot at the time. And we kept missing each other throughout, you know, jobs and worked for the same people but never met. Anyway, met, started dating, decided to open a restaurant together, looked for a spot, found a spot but couldn't get any money, so basically, we got every credit card we can find and maxed them all out and found a little spot in the Mission on 18th Street. And we were really confident about that location. I had friends come up and tell me we were crazy out of our minds, but it was 98, and people were not yet going back to Dolores Park at that point. It was still a little scary. There were gates in front of all the businesses. And the first thing we did when we got the space was get a sawzall and cut the gate off. And By Right had opened a couple of months before we did. And anyway, we opened, we somehow managed to get the doors open. We couldn't get any investors, but we got a lot of credit cards and wound up getting an SBA loan through this Ponzi scheme sort of thing that I won't go into right now.
Just out of curiosity, how many credit cards does it take? Because I'm going to open my own eatery someday, so...
I would. What's the thing online now, Richie?
Kickstarter.
Oh, right. Yeah. All right.
I would do something modern like
put
that.
Put a Kickstarter on it.
The internet.
All right. Thank you, Craig.
Anyway, that's it.
Anthony and Richie, you guys also come from the industry. Could tell me very briefly about your journey in the industry.
Want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first. So I was working in restaurants as a waiter and as a bartender and sometimes dishwasher. And it was just cash in my pocket. It was really easy. I always looked at the guys in the kitchen and said, I'll never, ever, ever do that because they have to stay late and they sweat and they make no money. At the same time, I was cooking a lot at home And then it's the most unromantic story because a friend of mine told me she was going to CCA, and I was so mad because I knew I was a better cook than she was. So I went to CCA back when I was on Polk, did a tour, went to school. I actually got something out of it as opposed to what everyone else would tell you. And then started working in restaurants, Vada V in Walnut Creek, then Presa V, which is now closed, and then Nopa. And then after 2.5 years at Nopa, decided to go off and do my own thing and make ramen in a tent.
Cool. Anthony, what about you?
My story is kind of similar in that I was an ambitious home cook, and I kind of just would go out to eat all the time and wonder, like, you know, why don't people do this better? And so in 2004, I moved to San Francisco. Previously, I had kind of like an office job and, you know, would surf the web half the day, and it was kind of boring. I got into the food industry, pretty much had no idea what I was doing, but because I spoke Chinese, I got a job in a kitchen that had some Chinese speakers, and eventually I tried to get a job at like a good restaurant. So I actually interviewed with Craig, though he doesn't remember because it was so long ago. But but I mean, as a side note, that's amazing to think that like the owner would sit down and interview like a nobody candidate for, you know, a salad station or something. But anyway, ended up at Bar Tartine, and it was great because they were just opening, and Tartine was like a great, obviously a great organization. But basically learned there for several years, and then kind of on a whim, since I was pretty happy at work, just decided to do something on my day off, which was like sublet a taco truck and sell kind of some fancy tacos. And then it turned out someone like posted it to a blog, and then before I knew it, there was like a line waiting for us before we had even set foot in the truck for the first time, you know, which speaks towards kind of like the new school of the food world or whatever. But so from there, moved indoors to a Chinese restaurant and started doing pop-ups there in 2008, and we did pop-ups like twice a week with guest chefs, and actually Iso and Richie were guest chefs over the course of the about 2 years that we did it. And eventually at some point I met a really cool guy and good chef, Danny Bowen, who kind of came on as like co-chef of Mission Street Food, and we did that for a while, and then eventually decided to turn it into a Chinese restaurant because we were already sitting there in a Chinese restaurant using woks to like grill stuff or whatever. So instead, we just decided to use woks as woks. And
nice. So it seems like you both have, you know, some industry experience. And you mentioned 08, and that was a big year for me because that's when I met Iso at a party, and he was like, "I'm selling mushrooms, you know, in a box, and it's going to be like a community forage box." So tell us how you started.
Yeah, my path's a little bit different than everyone else up here, but I kind of originally started. I've always worked in restaurants, but all front of the house, kind of like Richie. But I never actually went to culinary school, so I did waiting, bartending. And I was always really interested in food, really liked to cook. And when I moved out here, I kind of discovered foraging. Met some foragers who forage mushrooms professionally, and like it was kind of something that I had always like. If you were asking me where wild mushrooms come from, I'd be like, oh, like someone must have gone out in the woods and gotten them. But like, it was nothing. It was something like that connection. I never really made that connection, you know, which I think is something that I feel like a lot of people, you know, like making that kind of psychological leap. And so I started foraging mushrooms with them and kind of realizing that they weren't making any money from them. So started driving down in the city and just like cold calling restaurants, like knocking the back doors of restaurants, just like showing up with wild mushrooms and just like at the back door. So that was kind of like the beginning of Forage SF. Was like me and my Saab, like full of like flats of wild mushrooms, like chanterelles and black trumpets.
Have you tried to sell to any of these guys?
No, I never did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
You did I?
Yeah.
Actually, I went into Delfino once. Yeah, I did.
Did we buy them?
No, I don't know what happened. Like, I didn't. You know, I went in and I didn't actually have any at the time. I was like going in to talk to you guys about it, and you guys were into it.
Called
pre-sales.
Like,
oh, yeah, I'll totally come back. But I was
always buy mushrooms from those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Farina was the only place that was really mean to me. So just putting that out there.
Was Richie nice to you?
Yeah. I don't. Was it Inopa?
No, it was at Presa V out in the Presidio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
And you can't. And I just remember the mushrooms were always really dirty. And I was like, yeah. I was like, come on, mushrooms.
They come from the woods, yeah, you know. So. I didn't really, like, know how to present them in a restaurant. So I just kind of tried to figure it out. So that was kind of the beginning of Forge SF. And through there, kind of, that was about 4 years ago. And from there, I've just kind of, like, tried to follow my own interests and passions to focus my business around that. So I've always really loved to cook. Never really worked in back of house or restaurants. Again, like Richie, it was like, I'd see those guys making like half what I was making, working twice as hard. And I was like, I wanted to be cooking, but like, I could never quite make that leap. You know, he went and made that leap, but like, kind of my leap was to start. I started the Wild Kitchen, which is my underground supper club. Kind of as a way to not only help people make that kind of psychological leap to, like, this came from the woods and now it's on your plate, but also to be, like, to be able to create menus. I really love, like, creating dishes, creating menus, and kind of, like, creating scenes. And from there, started the underground market, again, following my own interest in selling in a farmer's market and not being able to get in. And then most recently, Forage Kitchen is my newest project, and that's kind of, like, through the years of working in this community, it's kind of the thing that I've seen really needed. Like, there are shared-use kitchens. There's kind of, like, a dearth of them, but there are a couple of shared-use kitchens, but none that, like, kind of, like, create a community around the people in them, you know? So I'm kind of interested in creating something that's, like, a home for you when you're starting a business. You know, it's not just, like, a rental space, but kind of, like, an intentional community of people working towards the same goal.
So you said it seems like you took a lot of leaps. For you guys, what made you take the leap to start your own business?
For me, it was I got offered a job in New York that paid a lot of money, and it was really lucrative and relatively high profile. But at the time, my wife was pregnant with our son, and so we had this long conversation about moving out there and should we do that, and decided to stay here. And so we said, if we're going to stay here, we're going to do our own thing, because I'm tired of making money for other people. So now I don't make any money for anybody.
Craig, what about you?
I always wanted to own my own restaurant and finally found someone to do it with and wanted to be my own boss. I'm a really crappy employee, I've got to say.
I think we all are. That's why we're here. What about you, Anthony?
I guess for me, it was mostly just stumbling into a really good situation and having a lot of demand for what I was doing. I never, at that time, expected that, you know, like a taco truck would turn into like something bigger and bigger. So I was lucky.
For you guys, how did working in the industry prepare you to take that leap? And in what ways did it not prepare you?
For me, I think like just the going in the kitchen every day and cooking and the repetition of that and putting in the hours. It's a big combination. It's the camaraderie. It's the repetition. It's the difficulty of it. It's the failing. Doing that over and over and over again is what makes you a cook and what makes you ready to do something more. The repetition of experience and hardships and a little bit of good time.
Do you guys feel like that's necessary? So Issa, you don't come from kind of that experience or that industry. How has it hindered or helped you?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's helped and hurt me in different ways. I think that, like, the reason I started doing the dinners the way I did them is because I didn't want to go through the whole kind of process, to be quite honest. Like, I'm a horrible employee. Like, I can never work for anybody ever again in my entire life. So, like, my business, you know, doesn't do well. I'm in really bad shape. But, like, I just wanted the freedom to control the menu, to control the scene. And I almost feel like like underground dinners, pop-ups, kind of that whole scene, and restaurants should almost be thought of as like different beasts. Like I almost think that because the thing about a restaurant is that people are coming back day after day, they expect the same thing. Like you need that repetition, like you need that ability to like make the Caesar salad exactly the same, or like, you know, Norma's going to come in and she's like, I've been coming here every Wednesday for 20 years. And like, you know, last time I had more salt and like, I'm pissed off about that. Whereas like in my dinners, it's like every menu is different. You know, there's never often almost all the dishes are different. And I'm given that freedom to kind of create that situation. I mean, on the flip side is like, I don't have the restaurant experience, so I can't, I don't know. I guess my like position feels uncomfortable in some ways. Like when people call me chef, like it feels like I don't know if that's like who I am. Because there is this kind of like old school mentality of like working your way like through culinary school, through you know, through stages, through, you know, going to France, that I didn't have. So
what title did you give yourself?
I don't know. I struggle with that, actually. I mean, I think my dinner is like co-chef, you know, like what I do is I work with people who have a lot more technical ability than me, you know, and are able to help plug the holes that I have. But at the same time, like I bring the vision of the menu and kind of that side of it. So it's a hard situation. It's a lot less straightforward than it used to be, I think.
What are titles you guys would give yourselves? Do you guys consider yourselves chefs?
He's the only real chef.
He's the only real chef. I think that's fair.
It still feels weird when people call me chef all the time. Yes, chef. Yes, chef. What do you want, chef?
Why does it feel weird?
Just weird. It's just weird to be, it's like, wow, I can't believe it worked. All this work, you know, it's like, wow, I'm here. It's have a successful business and happy life. And wow. I never thought it would actually work out.
It's hard to shake off a cook's mentality, I think.
Yeah.
Like when you come up doing that for years and years and years, it's hard to get rid of that, you know.
I still want to like clean up at the end of the night. I just feel like I should be in there doing that. I'm perpetually guilty that I'm not either cleaning. But then if I'm there cleaning, I feel like I should be home.
Like, you remember those? Like you would be sitting in the kitchen, you'd see a chef like doing paperwork, and you'd be like, God, what's that guy doing in there all day? He's just playing around, and then you become that guy, and you're like, oh my God, that's the paperwork all day. You know?
Other than Man of Steel, what title would you give yourself? It's not chef.
I'm owner and co-chef, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm the owner for sure. So, but, like, I mean, if you guys come down to market, like, I stand over a fryer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't expedite the service. I don't do any of that. I fry. I pour the heavy pot, and you know, like of stock. That's my job. So I'm the owner, and at heart, I'm a cook.
What about you, Anthony?
I think probably something similar. There's like a mental image of a chef, and we've all worked for chefs. And you know, even if you create a dish or execute a dish, I don't feel like I'm that person still. So.
For sure. I like hustler, and I think we're probably all hustlers to some extent here. So
there you go.
That works for me.
I had to sign the linen contract the other day. I wrote capo, so I figured, okay, I'll take that as a title.
Do you guys feel like it's necessary to go through culinary school or to have industry experience to be successful?
I do. I think it's important. I mean, so it's not to say that there aren't exceptions to the rule, like a guy like Iso or even you. They can start a pop-up or, you know, just kind of go out on their own without any real experience and do it. But I think that that is the complete exception to the rule. And I think that there's a real lack of people that are actually paying the dues and learning the vocabulary of cooking and learning all the basics. Like, everyone wants to go out there and just do their own thing now. Everyone wants a food truck or a TV show or, you know, they want to start a pop-up dinner or whatever, and no one wants to put in work. So,
how do you think that affects the food scene at large?
I think it lowers the bar for everybody. I think that ultimately it makes the level of mediocrity rise, and I think excellence just kind of falls by the wayside, and I think ultimately it hurts everybody.
I just really don't think that's true. Like, I think that, like, I don't, like, especially in the city, like, I think that, like, you can look at someone like Craig, who's been running Delfino, like, for years and years and years, and, like, making excellent food, and that's why it's been open for, you know, for so many years. And there's lots of restaurants that are those kinds of places, you know? They're, like, people know they're excellent. People always go to them. They've, like, stood the test of time. And then there'll be a pop-up, and, like, that person will either, like, do it for a month and disappear because it's not very good, or it's, like, just a trend, or they are excellent, and then they'll take that next step. It's like, you know, you're an example. Like, you do farmers markets, you do pop-ups, and now you're taking the next step to a restaurant, you know? And, like, I think that people eat food for, like, 1,000 different reasons, you know? It's like, and the fact that, like, it tastes delicious is like, one humongous one, but I think that, like, there's the ideas around food, you know, the concepts that people bring to it, and I think that a lot of that comes through in pop-ups. It's almost more, like, ideologically focused, but I think that especially in this city, there are really excellent restaurants, and there's, like, really horrible restaurants, and there's, like, great pop-ups and terrible pop-ups, but, like, I don't think that one brings the other down, you know? Like, I think that they can all exist together. I don't know.
Something for everybody.
Yeah, that's the thing. Especially in this city, like, it's everywhere. You know, I mean, everything, you know, you can eat any kind of food, and whether, you know, whether you're, like, want the next cool thing, or you want, like, the standby. That's
a really good pizza.
A really good pizza. You know, like, you know where to go. So I think it's just, like, a choice.
Well, I think I've kind of been basically on both sides of that coin now, where, you know, I had a long stint doing pop-ups, and then have been in sort of conventional restaurants since then. And I think I have to side with Richie a little bit and say that, like, the lower barriers of entry definitely do just create more possibilities for, like, unqualified people. I think there was a thing where, like, in L.A., a food truck maker, like, stopped selling food trucks because too many people were, like, buying food trucks and screwing up. And so, you know, I know for a fact, had I not worked for a few years, I definitely would not have been, you know, remotely as successful or whatever, which is, again, not to say that it's not possible to do it. It's totally possible. But, you know, I would venture a guess that, like, Issa would be even more successful had he somehow gotten that training. But I'm not sure.
Craig, what are your thoughts as someone who's had a brick and mortar for a while?
I think when we opened Delfina, it was a new thing. It was a new way to open. What we did was, it was new at that point. Yeah, it was a restaurant, but it was a kind of a restaurant where the waiters were what they want, and where the prices were low, and where we kind of did things our own way. We played rock and roll, and it was just kind of down and dirty when we opened, at least. And that was kind of a new thing back then. And to just pull it together. You know, all of my colleagues at the time were waiting until they had a lot of investors and a lot of money, and they were opening restaurants with a, you know, underwater decor, or you know, the rotisserie to die for, or whatever it was that they were waiting for. And we just, like, did it. You know, a lot of it, I mean, we didn't know what we were doing, but we just did it. And that was new at that time. And I think what's new now is a lot of the pop-ups and food trucks and like I mumbled earlier, there's something for everybody, really. I think I seriously think it's an exciting time.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of us come from that. Like, we just felt like we needed to do something, start the underground market or start selling ramen, and we just did it. And it doesn't come easy because you're dealing with new spaces, whether you're a restaurant within a Chinese restaurant. So what were some of the challenges to kind of doing these new things?
What aren't the challenges?
Yes,
it's like
the health department.
Yeah.
Do tell.
I mean, that's the thing about this kind of, like, new. I mean, like, underground dinners, underground market. I mean, like, underground is in both the names of them. But yeah, it's like trying to do something that is new. I don't know how to say this exactly, but yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of trouble with the with the health department. But it's been kind of like a learning process, and now I'm kind of like grown up. I'm open like a real place, you know. So it's, but I needed that time, you know. I needed that like incubation period to like be able to do things that work more under the radar. And I think that like what it does, and like this is what I notice now when I'm trying to plan events, is like my ability to kind of be creative with like with the scene, with like the way I set things up, with like the kind of things I want to cook, is a lot harder. So it's kind of an interesting, it's like an interesting trade-off. If you don't have, you know, if you have like a brick and mortar space and like everything is kind of everything's taken care of, you're able to have that freedom in that space. But if you're trying to move around, it's a little bit easier to just kind of go more renegade. So that wasn't, yeah. That's it.
So I think to be successful in today's food scene, you need to have like the cooking chops, you know, like the technical skill sort of experience, as well as like the internet skills, being able to spread the word on the internet or learn through it. So to do research for this panel, I basically went through everyone's Twitter accounts, their past 1,000 tweets. And Richie, I saw that you had a discussion with someone on Twitter, a certain underground cook, about how he learned how to cook on the internet. And he felt that certain chefs were upset because they didn't have to kind of go through that ladder. Can you tell us what was your reaction to that and why that was?
I wasn't very happy about that. I wasn't happy about that, and I was publicly not very happy about that. This guy cooks modernist cuisine, molecular gastronomy type food, and I see a lot of people, like a lot of young cooks, coming up and jumping right into that and not learning how to make pasta. You know what I mean? Like, or how to, you know, cut a carrot the right way.
Roasted chicken.
Right, you know? Even tie a chicken before it gets in the oven. And so it was upsetting to me because it felt like he was making light of the importance that all these chefs and cooks and peers of mine and chefs that I looked up to placed on their body of work and on the dues that we've paid. And he was saying, like, well, you can go on an internet or jump on a forum or whatever, have a quick chat, look up a recipe, buy a gram scale and some agar agar, and then blammo, you have an awesome pop-up dinner. And I just totally disagree with that. And
But at the end of the day, if the guy's making money and people are coming to, I don't know if he has a restaurant or what, but if people are coming and enjoying it and he's successful, I guess,
yeah, and if he was making delicious food, like, I don't know if he's making delicious food or not. But still, for me especially, I think there's something to be said just for the struggle of the whole thing and the work that gets put in, you know. I think there's something admirable behind that. Ultimately, I think it comes across in people's food, you know. I think you can see, you know, a person who has put their heart and soul into learning a craft and have that come across in the flavors and in the feeling of the restaurant or the pop-up or whatever it is, you know. But just to say, like, oh, I jumped on the internet and I started up last month and I have a busy pop-up and I'm making, you know, all these recipes out of this cookbook or whatever, and I'm just doing as well as you, I would totally disagree. I would say maybe monetarily you're doing that well, or maybe you have a million Twitter followers or whatever it is that you define success by, but that'll fade, you know. And it comes down to the respect of your peers, your community, other chefs, other people in the food world.
I kind of just think of it as, or the same thing, I kind of just think of it as like the A team or something, where, you know, it's probably the A team, like, they're like renegades, but they knew their stuff before they became renegades. Mm. You know, I like that model more.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember reading that and kind of like feel like when you kind of had that, because I know that guy. He used to be my lawyer, actually. It's like totally random. But yeah, because I'm kind of like I kind of feel both sides, you know. Like, I think that, like, I kind of like read what he wrote and I was like, you're just being a jerk. Like, you just, like, it was like clearly it wasn't something that people should say. I mean, it's like there's tons of respect and like having a ton of experience like going through that process, and like you need to respect that. But I think at the same time, like, I'm kind of on the other side in a way that, like, I don't like learn everything off the internet, but like I learn from, I like pull people in, learn from them, try to spend a lot of time doing that. but like I am kind of more, you know, I do underground dinners and don't run a restaurant. And so I think that like, you know, like there's something for everybody, that like, that there can be space for both, you know? And I think that that's like where the tension is. It's like, there's kind of a feeling on one side that there's like no space for, I think that like there's a feeling kind of like more like old school side. There's like no space for this, like these people doing this kind of thing, and you can't come up in a different kind of way. And I think that, you know, if you're successful and like, if you're just starting out, you can, you know, you can still be putting a ton of heart into things. You just haven't spent years learning how to do it.
Well, I think that the internet is such a valuable tool, you know, and I think that being self-taught is, it's pretty awesome being self-taught, you know, and I would say that, I mean, I'm sure that you've taught yourself plenty of things, Chef, right? And those become the things that become ingrained in you. But it's balancing all of that out. It's knowing your craft and teaching yourself and going on the internet and looking up stuff that's totally foreign to you and absorbing that also.
I mean, I guess we used to look in cookbooks.
To me, a notable exception would be the British chef, Heston Blumenthal, because he's like primarily self-taught. But I feel like, you know, he's self-taught in like a really, really ambitious way, where he's like going to the scent laboratories and like working with them to like create a revolutionary experience for people. And like, you know, even though he's self-taught, his standard is like the absolute highest standard, you know. And so you can do it, certainly. Like,
so there's teaching yourself and then a more formal culinary education. And Craig, I saw that you're one of the deans of the San Francisco Cooking School.
I am.
Which is slated to open this fall. What do you plan on telling your students?
Well, dean's an honorary title. I'm on the board. I'm on the advisory panel. And I think dean was a title given to us.
How do you, what do you plan on telling your students on and how to make it in today's culinary world?
Good question. work hard. It's a lot of work. I would tell them that, I think, like I said earlier, I think people are looking at the food network and they're looking at the glamorous side of things, and there's very little glamour. You know, you get to a point, and sure, I mean, you get to sign people's menu or you get to be on TV if that's what you really want, but most people are not going to be on TV, and it's a lot of hard, unglamorous work, late, long hours. I mean, that there's no way around that. That is what it takes. Whether you're a pop-up or a restaurant or whatever, you're hauling and schlepping, and it's physical, and it takes a long time to learn things.
Mm-hmm. What's the most unglamorous moment you guys have had?
I know one, actually. Yeah, it was when I was doing I was doing the Wild Kitchen. It was kind of when I was first starting out. It used to be like in people's houses, and I'd give two tickets in exchange for use of their house. And it was this house in the Mission, and I didn't have a truck at the time, so I had to borrow one from some guy who I knew was a caterer who had his space over on 3rd Street. So it was like midnight, later in that, it was like 1:30, I drove back over to 3rd Street, dropped off the truck, and needed to take the bus, and like the 24 had stopped, or like it wasn't coming, and I was like, so I took the bus, I ended up getting the bus like up to Geneva, and it was like 3:30 in the morning, just like standing totally exhausted. I've been like working nonstop for like days and days. Hadn't really made any money from the whole dinner that I did. And that was a moment where I was like, what am I doing? You know, like, but yeah, it was fun. In retrospect, yeah. Hey.
Go ahead.
No, I want to hear yours.
For me, it was our first pop-up that we did at a coffee bar. Like, all of you people probably showed up to it. There were so many people there, and it went so poorly, like the whole thing.
What happened?
I didn't do my due diligence and go in the kitchen and see exactly what it looked like. So kind of like went into the day of and like we're like, oh, we'll put this here, put this there. And we start plugging stuff in, like the whole kitchen shorted out.
Because they don't have burners.
Because they don't have burners.
Yeah, sorry.
And then, and also they have really old electricity in there. And then on top of that, we started boiling a bunch of water and running the circulator and had the oven on and the whole kitchen turned in like a sauna. So there's like water dripping from the ceiling on you. And fresh noodles don't love moisture like that. And so we had a really, really hard night. And I had already put in my notice at NOPA.
How did you feel? Did you reconsider that when you...
Well, I had put in my notice. My replacement was trained, and my baby was 3 weeks old. So I was in the game by then.
For me, it involves a lot of daikon pickles. So Katie and I schlep our stuff in her little Montero, and sometimes we have daikon pickle spillage, and it doesn't smell very good. It's not very glamorous when you have to clean that up. What about you, Anthony?
Well, I think Richie's experience is like almost every other day at Mission Chinese Food. So. Probably for me, it's like the thing where you're scrambling around. You don't even have time to like talk to anyone, barely. You've like had to go to the bathroom for 3 hours or something, and you don't even go because you have too much stuff to do. And then you wonder, like, what am I doing?
Craig, to go back to the whole schooling and the new San Francisco cooking school, any new advice you would give them for like the new food world? Anything about social media or about presence?
Well, social media for us, I will say, is about it's a type of marketing, really. We don't. I tweet. And we have Facebook pages and things, but it's not. I don't really live in that world. It's for us. It's a means of marketing. Mm-hmm. And as far as the tweeting, I really don't think people want to hear everything I have to say all the time.
I do. I don't want to hear it.
You'd be surprised.
I'm thrilled. But for us, the internet, it's about marketing, really, mm-hmm. for us. And I would tell people, you know, because when people come to our restaurant, we're touching people. I mean, they're eating food and we're serving them and we're taking care of people in a real way. So as far as online community and that sort of thing, it's I'm 48 years old. What can I tell you? It's for me a means for marketing. But mm-hmm. I would say market well to the people at the school, I guess.
So since you're gonna deal with a lot of young cooks in that school, I'm just wondering if you guys know how young cooks view the culinary world right now. Has their attitude changed at all towards the latter? And has the chef cook dynamic changed at all? For people who hire cooks?
I have a young cook working for me, and he's the best kid in the whole world. He's the nicest kid, and he has his whole heart in it. I feel like the whole time that I've been running Hapa Ramen, I've been blessed to have only good employees except for one guy that I can think of. Just people that are loyal, that are into it, that stick around, and that work really, really hard. And generally speaking, they're all younger than me. They call me old. I'm 33. They think I'm, like, really old. So, I think that young cooks are great, but I think that's because I haven't had to deal with a lot of, like, bad young cooks yet. You know, and I talk to chefs that run great restaurants in this town that can't find cooks.
We cannot find cooks.
It doesn't make sense.
Why do you think that is?
I think to be a cook in San Francisco, it doesn't pay very much. And what happens is cooks come out of culinary school, and I think a lot of them wind up getting promoted faster than they should be. They take jobs beyond their capacity before they're ready for them because they need to make enough money. They need to move out of the place with five roommates in the Lower Haight. You know, they've got it. They need to get. You know, they need to make enough to buy dinner on their nights off. I mean, it's a really tough situation. So I think there's that drives cooks up that way. Up the ladder faster than they should be.
What are the consequences to that? Cooks moving up really fast? Pros and cons?
They're not quite qualified for the positions that they're in. I mean, their cooking is not where it should be. The real consequences for me is I can't find any goddamn cooks. I mean, I cannot find any cooks. It's so hard. When you find them, you know, you hang on to them. But, you know, like I said earlier, it's a lot of hard work, and people are expecting a more glamorous ride, I think, if they're straight out of school.
Mm-hmm. So, Richie, I know that you, the young cook you're talking about, found you because he read your blog when he lived in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering how social media has changed not only how your audience looks at you, but how future employees look at you? Like, are there certain kinds of people coming towards you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the cooks that I have right now who makes all the stock, does all the ordering, she's more or less our sous chef. She heard about the job through her friend who saw a tweet that we put up about needing a job. So, yeah, I mean, definitely social media has changed the game for us in terms of who we attract, customer-wise, employee-wise, everything. It's kind of our whole world, actually. And I'm lucky enough to have two Twitter identities through the business and through myself. So it attracts two different types of people. And they're usually surprised when they meet each other. So,
So I know that, so you guys are here because we feel like you guys are successful. And I know it's a hard thing to define, but do you guys feel like you're successful?
No.
Why is that?
There's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of more work to do.
What do you think success would look like for you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that means necessarily. It's such a vague term. Does that mean that you've made an indelible mark on cooking as a whole? Does it mean that you're a household name? Does it mean having your face on your frozen food product in Safeway? Like, I don't know what that means, really. I mean, like who's successful? Is Thomas Keller successful? Like, is he the standard for that? Or is Paul Bocuse that guy? Or, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, or, you know, is it a guy like Mario Batali who has a ton of different restaurants and makes good food? Like, I don't know what that means.
Would it be sending your son to college? Talk about your son a lot.
That would be just great if he could go to college and not wind up cooking.
What about you, Anthony? What do you feel like you're successful, or what does it look like?
Well, like Richie said, there's a lot of work left to do, but I guess the reason I got into the industry to begin with was sort of this idea that, like, you know, if you're good, someone's going to buy your food, whether it's like $9.50 or $10, and, you know, why not just make it $10 and, like, donate the 50 cents and just try to be good enough to do that? And so I feel like the places that I've been involved in, we've been able to do that to varying degrees of profitability as a business, but at least, you know, I think everybody feels good about, you know, working there and can kind of look back and feel like, you know, we weren't just serving food to rich people. We were helping our community, you know, whatever. So to some extent, yes.
Cool. Issa, what about you?
I mean, I feel like I'm successful because I have the ability, like success for me is freedom, you know, like I have the freedom, and it's an amazing, amazing opportunity, like the freedom to, like, if I have an interest in doing something, like being able to follow that, and I like have that latitude, like I can like start dinners or I can try to start this kitchen, which is like an insanely huge project, but like I work for myself, I'm doing things that I enjoy, like I feel good about them. I think that like that is, for me, is success. It's not so much like money is freedom to me, you know, like money is that, like, you can be able to do a lot of the things you want to do. So I think that, like, as long as I'm in a place where I feel like I'm still, like, doing what I really want to be doing, I'll feel successful.
And Craig?
I feel successful. it's kind of what Issa said. What I tell our cooks is, if we can keep making delicious food for people and they come back and pay us money for delicious food, then we can keep this restaurant going. And if we keep the restaurant going, we can keep doing what we love to do. And that's basically the way I see it. It's the revenue comes in, and we can keep doing what we like to do. And,
So what does the future hold for you guys? What are you guys excited about? Two guys got their Kickstarters funded recently.
Yeah, go Richie.
I'm excited about opening a restaurant someday, 2016 or something like that. Yeah, no, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about working with the people that I work with and going on to future projects with them. And I'm excited to see what other people do in this town, you know. I think that, like we've been saying, that San Francisco supports food in a really unique way. And seeing how people come up and, you know, I mean, look at what Anthony did, you know. I mean, it's insane. Like, I told you I have that email from him from 2008.
What is email site?
I can tell you, actually.
Real quick, while Richie's pulling that out, we have 5 minutes before we go to Q&A with the audience. So if you have something to ask, please line up at one of the two microphones right over there. Thanks.
So Anthony sent me this email on October 29, 2008. And it says, "Hey, Richie, someone at work mentioned your blog to me. I cook at Bar Tartine for the past month, ran a gourmet food truck in the Mission. It got shut down, and he says, I'm going to try to sublet a restaurant. I'm going to invite guest cooks to join me and offer their dishes in an attempt to create an indie chef movement or something." And then there's more, but, like, look at that, like, 4 years ago and, like, what that's become.
I got an email like that from you about my dinners, yeah. What's on the Wild Kitchen.
What's funny is, or like, as Craig says about not being able to find cooks, I thought the second we, like, started inviting people to do that, we were just going to get, like, hundreds of emails, and I was going to spend all my time, like, sorting through all these emails, which would be really hard because I was working a full-time job and whatever, trying to do this on the side. And it was the hardest thing to get a single person to do one.
Your second email says that.
Yeah.
Why do you guys do what you do?
I never learned to do anything else, so I have no other options.
I think that's probably the most accurate thing. Just I don't think that anyone that cooks professionally and does it well is suited to do anything else. Just can't sit still. Definitely can't sit at a desk. Can't, you know, to a certain point, ADD, I guess, you know. I think that we all just need constant stimulation and noise and excitement.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much. And as a reminder to our audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Clubs and Forum, Connect Your Intellect, and tonight we're hosting Climbing the SF Food Chain. We're here with Anthony Mitt, co-founder, chef and co-founder of Mission Street Food, Mission Bowling Club, Mission Chinese Food, Mission Burger, and Commonwealth Restaurant. We're also here with Issa Rabins, founder of Forge SF, the Underground Market, and Forge Kitchen. Richie Nakano, chef and owner of Hopper Ramen, and Craig Stoll, chef and co-owner, along with wife Annie, of Delfina, Pizzeria Delfina, Wakanda, and is the 2008 James Beard Award winner for Best Chef. And I'm Valerie Liu, co-founder and cook at Rice Paper Scissors, sometimes known as a hustler. Now let's hear from our audience.
Hi, my name is Scott Cameron, and rather than a question, I think I have what might be an interesting resource. I've opened a restaurant called Guest Chef over in the Rock Ridge District of Oakland. And if you're an aspiring foodie, you want to open a restaurant, you can apply online and for 2 weeks at your restaurant. We've been open since November, and we've had just a really amazing variety of chefs that have come through and cooked. And so far it's been fun, and we put out some really good food. So if people are interested, they might give it a try.
All right, next question.
My name's Elizabeth, and I started my first restaurant in Boston in between Harvard Square and between Harvard and MIT. It was a 400-square-foot restaurant, 10 feet wide and 40 feet long. And we grew to be 6 restaurants, and we'd get Best of Boston. And it was fun. It was really fun. And what we did was we invented the food, and it was the time that it was in. And so here's my question that I've been thinking about. When you come to San Francisco and you do a restaurant, is it only good for 5 years? Like, is there only that moment when it's really appropriate to have it, and then you should close it and make it something else? Like, some people who are on the stage have lovely long-term restaurants that are fabulous. But for the most part, is there a moment for an idea and then it should go away? I don't know. What do you think?
That depends on the food you're making, I guess. You know, I mean, if you're trying to play into trends, and if you're playing into what you think people want instead of doing what your passion is and just cooking the food that you really love, then yeah, you probably only have 2 years, if that. Or if you're trying to satisfy bloggers and Yelpers and people like that, then you probably won't last very long. But if your intention is to sustain people, then you'll probably last, you know, 10 years or more. I don't know. I hope, right?
Well, I mean, what all of our decisions we made were based on longevity. I mean, anything we did, that's what we were thinking about. So that was our goal. And I mean, I think we cook to feed people. It's not about us. And I think if you're cooking to, if it's about hospitality and taking care of people, I think there's a lot of years on that.
Well, I think you can also just be agile and keep doing what is, like, appealing for the moment, too.
So much more work, though.
Right.
I mean, I think, like, I haven't run a restaurant for a long time, and, like, but I think that, like, any idea needs to evolve, you know, like, anything you're doing, like everything. I do think that, like, you know, this moment, there are a lot of things happening that in, like, 3 years we'll be like, oh, like, why did anybody ever do that? Like, that's so old school. But, like, as long as those people who are doing, you know, as long as those ideas that are happening now evolve, you know, I think that people will continue to be interested in whatever anybody's doing, you know, as long as you're, like, kind of, like, I mean, look what you're saying, like, as long as you're, like, putting heart into what you're doing, like, people respond to that.
Great. Thank you, guys. Since we're short on time, let's keep it to questions only.
So I'm just wondering what you guys did to learn what you don't know and find the resources and the mentorship to take your businesses to the next level.
Ask questions, like ask everybody you know, people that you look up to. I think that one thing that probably all of us have in common is that we're not afraid to ask questions or to look like to look ignorant, for lack of a better word, to our peers. Just go to people and say, like, you know, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? Like, who's your lawyer? Does he do a pop-up now? You know what I mean? Like
maybe,
like,
not,
you know,
the best law.
Like, what contractor did you use? You know, like Anthony sending out emails just like far and wide to people. I think that's how you. That separates, you know, people who have an idea and people who make their idea wind up happening.
I was just in Richie's kitchen the other day being like, how do I serve 2,000 pieces of food at the SF Street Food Festival? So, yes, a lot of questions.
And we still, I mean, we're constantly still asking questions. We're still trying to meet with people smarter than us, more experienced than us, and to find out how to get to the next stage or how to do whatever it is we're trying to do. It's a constant.
Yeah, and I feel like in any industry it's that way. I mean, like anything you do, you know, if you're trying to make something, create something kind of larger than yourself, like reaching out to people around you, and like especially in this city, people are so helpful. It's just like astounding how much people want to help out. So, if you want to start something, just ask people; they'll help you.
Katie Kwan has a question.
Okay, so I'm a young female cook. I was just wondering if you guys could share some lady love and let us know, like, cooks that you really respect that are females that people like myself can look up to and work towards.
Melissa Perello, for sure. Right?
Yeah, that was my first choice.
Loretta Keller.
Tracy Desjardins,
for sure. Sarah Rich at Rich Table, which just opened a week ago. She's a total badass cook.
Dominique Krenn.
Dominique.
Melissa Cho, the pastry chef.
At Aziza.
Yeah. It's amazing.
The two girls that work for me, Susanna and Svet, they're both thugs for sure.
Cool, thanks.
Katie and Valerie.
I like up to my grandma. Over here.
I can also add Anthony's wife. Would be something. Yeah. So I have a question about, without, I guess, bashing the Department of Public Health, what local government can do to help inspire food enterprises and also a sustainable food system. And maybe there are two different things, but and if you want to maybe just answer one or both.
Maybe that question is me. I don't know. I mean, I think that everybody in Parliament, like DPH that I've talked to, like their heart's totally in the right place. Like they want to protect public health, and like that's like their mission in life. And like they run, they have to protect everyone's public health, you know, so they're kind of, their hands are tied in that way. How can they help? Maybe just, yeah, just working with, you know, working with people who are trying to do different creative kinds of things. And to be quite honest, they are super, they do work with me a lot. They spend a lot of time with me. So, like, no, it's just, like, totally unreasonable amount of time, you know, like, sitting down with me and, like, trying to explain why I shouldn't do this thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think just, like, it's like any, you know, it's like any governmental organization has to, like, think of the, like, the wider good and, you know, so they can't be so agile, but just being open to, like, helping and teaching people about the, like why things are the way they are, maybe, and how they can work to not only make, you know, in, like, let really interesting things happen, but at the same time protect, you know, the wider country.
Yeah. I think a website redesign wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah.
I'd like to see, like, a legislative change where front of house was allowed to share tips with back of house. Like, there's a pretty big income disparity often, and, you know, part of that is that servers have to make minimum wage, which is fine, but then I think you just should not disallow tip sharing. Like, it's just money that people can do whatever they want with.
Cool, next question.
Hi, my question is, besides your own restaurant, where is your favorite place to eat in San Francisco?
Outer Lands, out in the sunset, is really great. I live out there, so. I like to eat a Delfina, too.
So the Mutual Admiration Society here, I embarrassed to admit how often we have Mission Chinese delivered to our house. It's seriously, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, but.
I don't know, a lot of different places. I really love Kabuto. It's a sushi place on Geary. I just always really enjoy myself there. It's, like, very well done. So.
A couple weeks ago, I had dim sum in Daly City at Koi Palace. I've been there a lot, but I was struck again by just how excellent it is.
Nice. And I'm a Divis rat. I live on Divisadero, so it's always Nopa, late night.
Hi, my name is Radesh Ganesh Kumar. It's been an emotional roller coaster listening to you guys. I've been in my mother's kitchen since I was 5. I'm not trained. I love to cook. I have dinner parties, have 20, 25 people over to my house, and I cook all the time for them. They all love it. They keep telling me, why don't you start a restaurant? Why don't you start a restaurant? And I listen to you guys. I appreciate the thought that going to a culinary school, learning how to cut a carrot is important. But I do well for a living in the corporate world. I'm sick of it. I want to start a restaurant. Advice?
Well, I don't think that culinary school is just... So I didn't go to culinary school, but I don't think culinary school is just about learning how to cut a carrot. And right, and
that at all, but... Right. I'm just saying, do I need to go to school, or can I just use my cooking skills, which I've been doing for 25, 30 years now?
I would say don't go to school, but go work in a restaurant first.
I mean, it's like a muscle memory thing where, like, any successful restaurant is only going to be successful if it's operating, like, at a good rate of, you know, like, throughput or, like, work rate of each employee or whatever. If you can't work at that rate, you definitely can't get other people to work at that rate.
And I think school can be an accelerated way to learn what you would learn in the field, but you have to, I mean, how corny is this? You have to put in what you get out. You get out what you put in, but make sure to work in the business a little bit before you even think of going to school or opening your own place.
Craig's hiring cooks, so.
Oh, yeah, did I mention that?
I did invest in a restaurant. I understand the business side of it, but I don't understand the kitchen side of it. It's completely different. I get that.
I think y'all are going to take stashes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I didn't get from any of you guys, which I've heard from others, is don't start a restaurant. Thank you for that. So.
Well, next question.
My name is Francis Lopez. I'm with In the Weeds. And just a question, living or not, who, which chef would you want to learn from?
I worked for him. His name is Lawrence Jossel. He's the chef at NOPA. Valerie likes to go there. That guy's like, he's such a good guy to learn from. Smart, and he's nice. He doesn't yell. I worked for him already.
Role models? Anyone?
I'd go back and work for any Nona in Italy for another round. I would love to do that. Not a name chef, not a restaurant owner, or just a give me a Nona.
Great. Next question.
Yeah, hi. I'm Rebecca. I was just thinking about listening to all you guys about the different food scenes on the Pacific Northwest, like Seattle, Portland versus San Francisco, and the explosive stuff that's happening in Portland where people feel there are openings for chefs to do bold things, and Seattle, like Matt Dillon, who's got Sitkin's Spruce, who just won the James Beard Award. He's got his own farm in Vashon Island and sources locally from his farm and runs his restaurants from that, with this kind of philosophy with the locavore movement and the outstanding in the field dinners that, you know, these wonderful dinners that travel around the country. And I think that's incredibly interesting new stuff that's happening. And I just wondered, how do you guys feel about that? That it's kind of the underground dinner thing. It's kind of the using chefs and local places and using the produce that's available in that particular location and featuring the wines. And I was just wondering, I haven't heard you guys talk about sort of that locavore commitment or that, and if that's really exciting to you and where you think that's going. These kind of like outstanding in the field dinners where they travel across the country and use very famous chefs, like, for instance, yourself, and feature a dinner like in a mountain cove or a beautiful beach with 200 tables, and, you know, it inspires people to eat and to connect with their food. And I was just wondering if that was inspirational to any one of you, or where you see that going.
Yeah. Do you feel like a dinner like that is maybe for the elite, though, and isn't for the general diner?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the price.
$175.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I've dropped that at Delfina.
We did an outstanding in the field dinner early on. And,
yeah.
It was amazing for the guests. It was brutal
exciting.
For us.
Yeah.
They forgot to provide shade. We're in the field in Bolinas at Star Out Farms in September. One of the few nice days they got. It was brutal, but it was beautiful, beautiful thing, you know, for those who attended. Yeah. But as far as locavore, we use local ingredients, and we use them because we're here, and it makes sense, and they're the best, and, you know, there's a beauty in cooking with seasonal ingredients, and, you know, cooking with the rhythm of the year, and why wouldn't we? I mean, it's great stuff, but as far as I'm concerned, our restaurants, it's not a movement, it's not a theme, it's just the way we cook. It's like, why wouldn't we cook that way? So, I think in a lot of other parts, you know, I look at Craigslist ads for restaurants in New York, and people are opening a farm-to-table restaurant. They're looking for a chef for a farm-to-table restaurant. And I think the way we cook and the way a lot of people in San Francisco cook, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's not so much a movement as
responsibility.
Yeah,
I guess I was thinking more of people who are starting their own farms and sourcing from their own farms, which I guess you don't have to do here, but it's certainly happening in New York as well. So I was just curious if that was going in a new direction, that's all.
Cool, great. Anybody else, if we could limit it to questions because we're running out of time?
Okay. Hi, my name is Marcia, and I was wondering if any of you have a food truck or trucks operating outside your establishment, and I'd like to hear your comments from all of you.
I don't have a truck. I have a tent. Everyone thinks we're a truck because there's a truck called Hapa SF that makes really great Filipino food, but we have a tent. I don't know.
Well, she was saying, like, outside your restaurant.
Oh, outside of the restaurant itself.
So, right? Yeah.
I don't think any of us have that. Yeah. You guys should start one.
I'll get right on that.
I don't, but there's one at the BART platform at 16th and Mission that I used for a couple weeks. So if you wanna serve food there, you could probably talk to them.
Cool.
No, I wasn't thinking about myself. I was just trying to get feedback because it's been controversial in the city, and there's been a lot of complaints from restaurants.
Oh, you're talking about owning a restaurant and having a truck
Parked
out front.
Anyone have that experience? Nope. I think we're okay then.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry.
Cool.
Hello, my name is Michael, and I am the grilled cheese guy, and I know Iso very well, and because of him, I am who I am. And, you know, Valerie, who I also know, asked them when their lowest moment was, but I want to know the moment when you really knew you made it, because, you know, I don't think I've made it yet. I've had some nice moments, but when did you, you know, really feel it?
I don't personally think I've made it, you know, like I feel like there are these moments, you know. It's like I remember like the Underground Market the second time we did it, and the first time was like there were like 150 people showed up, and it was like, oh, super cool, and like we had a little booth, she was there, and we were selling mushrooms. And then the second time there was like a line like down the stairs outside, like around the block, and we'd gotten a spot that was like 5-10 times bigger than the space we had the first time, and it was just like, I just remember sitting outside and just being like, holy shit, like, what is going on? Like, how is this happening? And I think that those moments where you're like, this shouldn't be happening. Like, this, like, isn't reasonable, are the moments when I'm just amazed by, like, the Kickstarter, when that made it, you know, like, stuff like that. But I think you never, like, make it. You know, it's always steps in the right direction.
What about the rest of you guys? Any, I think I made it moments?
I think that if you lock on to one moment, then, I mean, moments are fleeting, you know, and they don't last, except for in your memory. So it's about creating that moment over and over and over and over again. And I haven't hit that point yet, where I just feel constantly comfortable and satisfied and, you know, like you can sit back. And I don't think that any of us ever will, you know. That's why we keep going to work every day.
So it is time for our last question, and it is the informed tradition to ask all of our speakers the following. Richie, Craig, Anthony, and Iso, what are your 60-second ideas to change the world? Ronnie, let's start with Anthony.
I guess for me it would be like, it's pretty easy to kind of blame the government or pass the buck on stuff. I think it's what I would say is just find something you like to do, try and do it in a utilitarian way.
Cool.
Not to steal your answer, but I would say find what makes you happy and find a way to go do that, and don't be lazy about it and don't bow to criticism or anything like that. Just go do it, and the world, love world peace. Like, the world would be awesome.
Yeah. You know, I try to be really nice to people, and I think if it's really simple, every day I try to figure out a way to be nicer to people and to remember the guy at the dry cleaner's name, or just to take 2 seconds and not get angry when I'm driving, and I just try to chill out a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's a good one. And I'm going to kind of steal both yours, but I really was thinking about it. Just like more people kind of doing what they love, you know, like more people who, like, wake up in the morning and they're not like, oh, I have to go to work today, or like, oh, you know, case of the Mondays, oh, it's only Wednesday hump day. It's like people who, like, just don't think like that, you know. It's like, I'm getting up because I'm, like, working towards something, you know, that gives me satisfaction. So I think that, like, that's, like, what makes you happy. And that, so if more people are doing that, I think there'd be a better place.
So instead you should wake up and be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mine starts out with the F word every day. So let's give a big round of applause to Craig, Anthony, Iso, Richie, and Katie for sharing their stories. Now, this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.